Good evening again. So a few weeks ago, I was in synagogue, the synagogue that I pray in, and on Shabbat morning, Saturday morning, after the prayers, I was milling around in the lobby with 100 other people, and a woman came up to me. She made a beeline for me and dispensed with the niceties and just said directly to me, "You know that interfaith stuff that you do?" I said, "Yeah," not knowing what she was going to say next. "Well, do you tell all the people there that the Messiah is coming and they'll be judged and they'll learn they're all in error and they'll be punished?" And I answered, "Absolutely not." And she said, "Well, then you're a disgrace to Judaism and you're a desecration of God's name," and she walked away. That's why interfaith life is important. To deal with that type of narrow, constricted, insular, angry, religious attitude. So, you have in front of you the sheets that I prepared. It says that I'm going to give you 5 reasons for interfaith dialogue. If you count, I listed 6. I might be a rabbi, but I can't count. Didn't become a mathematician. But I'm going to just talk on the basis of the sheet, making 5 into 6. So why are we doing this? In my opinion, based on my understanding of Judaism, based on the Jewish sources, based on the lived Judaism that I'm part of, well, the first reason I offered here is to broaden, to deepen, and to refine my understanding of God and Judaism. In other words, the first reason is about me. It's selfish. I need you. I need this framework. I need not just Jews, I need Christians and Muslims to help me broaden, deepen, and refine my understanding of Judaism. That assumes that religion is a journey. I don't have all the answers, and there's room to grow. And to grow, I have to absorb from outside of my tradition. A, B, and C. By having to articulate my own conception of Judaism and make it clear to the outsider. When I come before you and we talk about a topic like we'll do another 4 weeks, this world and the next world, life after death, well, I have to talk about it, define, to talk about it with people who aren't Jewish, I have to define what actually I believe. I have to think, I have to do some introspection. That's good for me. Number B, by having to grapple with and respond to intellectual and moral challenges to Judaism from without. Someone asks me a question, and I'm challenged by it. I have to think about it. I have to delve deep. I have to interpret. And again, that helps me to understand who I am. It helps me to deepen my Judaism. C, and this is different than A and B, by exposure to brand new ideas, interpretations, and experiences that can help my Judaism grow. I have been at Doug Skinner's church. It's not only that I'm challenged by ideas that I have to know how to disagree with, I also hear ideas that resonate with me. And they can be added to my understanding of God and Judaism. And I am deeply, deeply enriched by that. Of course, the assumption there is that my religion doesn't have all the answers. Again, there's room to grow. There's a need to grow. And the truth is not in my back pocket. And I might not find all the truth in my tradition. I can uncover, or perhaps we would say, add to my tradition interpretations that I find on the outside, and I quote-unquote convert them to Judaism. I reinterpret them, insights from widely divergent sources, and they make me a better Jew. And I'm still talking about things that are good for me as a Jew and as an individual. And at the end of talking about point number one, I mentioned there in italics that many, many Jews disagree with this. They don't want to be challenged from the outside. They don't think it'll help their Judaism grow. They see a danger of syncretism, a danger of dilution, a danger of being convinced by foreign ideas or having foreign ideas enter into our religion, and that is a little bit dangerous. There's another objection to interfaith dialogue. I actually mentioned 2 of them. 2 more. One is the sense that the religious experience is extremely private. In Judaism, it is likened to the relationship between a man and a woman. My relationship with God is extremely intimate. How dare me, say the opponents, how dare me hang it out in public for you to witness? It's an affront to modesty. That's one objection. Another objection is the fear of going into theological debt. At the beginning of the 1960s, when the Vatican II, was coming out in contrition for its atrocious relationship to Judaism for almost 2,000 years, there was a feeling among many rabbis, let them do what they have to do. But if they do it in dialogue with us, the next stage will be, after they made concessions to us, they will at least implicitly be expecting concessions from us. And we don't want to get into theological debt. So there are three dangers there that many see in this type of dialogue. Just to sum them up: learning from the outside things that don't belong in Judaism. And number two, because the religious experience is extremely private and should not be shared. And number three, the danger of theological debt. But despite all those three objections, I need it for my Judaism. That's point number one. Point number two is that I need this not just for my Judaism, but I need it, so I'm still talking about me, for something larger. Not just my inner Jewish life, but my general life. I need this experience to see God throughout the world and all human beings. I need this in order to experience the truth in all religions, not just to bring it into my Judaism, but because I feel I'm not a full human being until I am able to appreciate the truth that every human being, and especially every religious human being, brings to the table. And thirdly, I feel that I have to experience the Tzelem Elohim, the divine image, in every human being. I look at the Jewish sources and see that they tell me there is a divine image, a sacred divine spark in every human being. But you know what? I can read that in the books every day, but until I experience it, it won't be part of me. I have to get to know you, and I have to talk to you, and I have to have theological dialogue with you so that I can not just know, but I can experience the divinity within you, and then it will be, only then will it be a really part of me, only then will it be inculcated into my soul. And if that experience doesn't take place, then I'm going to forget, and I'm going to get insular. I'm going to start thinking, as so many Jews do, and there are Jewish sources to say this, that the Tzelem Elohim, the divine image, is found only among people of the Jewish faith. There are Jewish sources like that. I don't think they're the major sources, but they're sources like that. And people end up believing those sources when they live insular lives and don't have contact with the other in his or her full glory. That's the second reason why I need this. And those two reasons, they're pretty similar, and they're both about me. They're both very selfish. Why I need you in this room and in other rooms once a month in the house. The third reason, to spread my understanding of Judaism among peoples of different faiths in order to enrich the world. Because I believe Judaism has something to say, not just to Jews. I believe there's some wisdom there. There's some truth there. There's some insight there. Now, Judaism, I think, as opposed to Christianity and Islam, is not a missionizing religion. We don't believe on any level that you have to be Jewish to be saved or to be in a relationship with God or to be a good human being. I don't believe that you need it theologically, but I do think there's something to be enriched, something that can enrich your lives by having contact with some of the things that have enriched my life, and I want to share that. I want to share that. Now, there are many Jews, and this has a also foundation in Jewish sources, there are many Jews that believe that it's forbidden to share anything but the most basic things about Judaism with non-Jews, as if it's a secret religion. There is a basis for that in Jewish sources. And you know what? It's even the majority approach. But there are Jewish sources that talk about the permission, at least, and perhaps even the responsibility to share the insights of over 3,000 years of Jewish living with other human beings. That's number three. I'm doing good at the time? I hope so.
Doing good. 5 minutes.
Only 5 minutes left.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't begin yet. The fourth point is really the main reason. That's really what the whole thing is about. Number four, to bring people of different religions together in mutual understanding and respect, to break down prejudice and stereotypes, to share and promote common moral truths in order to create peace among religions and among people. In Judaism, peace, shalom, is one of the names of God. That means peace is a value. Peace is not just a value, it's an ultimate value. Human flourishing is a value. God created, according to our scripture, God created the world. And He created all the animals, He created all of life, He created human beings to be fruitful and multiply and to flourish. To flourish means a good human life. It means to get along with each other. It means to live in peace and harmony so that I have a responsibility to promote that. A responsibility to promote that. Now, religion is a powerful, powerful force in human life. I think it's much more powerful in life and in politics than many statesmen and politicians believe. We have to harness that force of religion for good. And I don't think it could ever be peace among nations until there's peace between religions. And there's never, ever going to be peace between religions until there's dialogue and understanding and human connection among religions and among people of other religions. Which really means that I have to experience the divine image in you, and it's not just for me that I have to experience that. It's for the world. It's good for the world. It's essential for the world. And as I have to overcome my prejudices, and I have prejudice just like everyone else, and you have to overcome your prejudices. There's been lots of prejudices against Jews in 2,000 years of history since our exile from the land of Israel. 3 minutes. Part of what's going on here tonight is to try and overcome those prejudices. And as a result, partially as a result of prejudices against Jews, Jews have developed prejudices against non-Jews. I'm here tonight to strip away those layers of prejudice, not just from you, but also from me. I'm going to go on. There's a fifth reason. There's a fifth reason why I believe this dialogue is so important. And this is one probably you wouldn't expect me to say to the half of the next page. I see Islam as a religion with lots of similarities to Judaism. But Judaism, as far as I see it, has much more experience in the modern world. Some of that experience has been difficult. Some of it has been positive. And I think that Judaism, after it has grappled with modernity and to a certain degree learned how to integrate modernity into a traditional conservative religion, perhaps Islam can save itself a lot of blood, sweat, and tears by learning from some of the experience of Jews and of Judaism in trying to grapple with the modern world with fidelity to tradition at the same time that we are integrating ourselves into modernity and democracy. There's the question, for example, of private school, parochial school versus public school. I think Muslims can learn there from Jewish experience. Dealing with food restrictions, kashrut and halal, I think they can learn from us. Dealing with homosexuality, these are all things I think that Judaism has a head start in dealing with, tradition and modernity, and perhaps Islam can learn a little bit from us. And the last point, this is so quick, I can't believe it, it's so quick. This was supposed to be an introduction, later see all the sources, which we won't get to, because everything I'm saying is backed up by some sources, but the last point is that there are some Jews who won't come to my classes when they're for Jews, but they will come to interfaith dialogue. So at least that's an opportunity to have them hear a rabbi speak, learn something about Judaism in interfaith setting. So, I have so many sources and I have 40 seconds. I will read you, I'll ask you to read the sources that I brought at home, and I'll read to you the last source. I'll skip everything I prepared for hours, slaving. I slaved over it.
You made the rules, Rabbi.
Let's read the last source together. I'm so good, I'm going to stay in the time. But let's read the last source together. the last piece of paper, and it says as follows. It's from Rabbi Abraham Isaac HaKohen Cook. Those who have great souls cannot be separated from the most encompassing inclusiveness. They need it and want it. All their desire and ideal is constantly the good of the entire universe in its full breadth, height, and depth. The love of all existence fills the heart of those who are good, the pious among all creatures and among humanity. They look forward to the happiness of all. They hope for the light and joy of all. They draw the love of all existence, which contains the full spectrum of the multiplicity of its creations, from the supernal love of God, from the love of the total and complete perfection of God, who is the cause of all, who brings all into being and gives life to all. When they come, in other words, when the great souls come to the strata of mankind, when we look at the world and find factions of nations, religions, sects and opposing ideals, they strive with all their strength, the great souls do, to encompass all of it, to connect and to unify with the healthy spiritual sense of their pure soul, which rises and flies to the godly heights above all constrictions. They recognize that all details must be full, that the best societal forms must be elevated, and must enter with all the satisfaction of their details into the light of a perfected life. They desire that every detail will be guarded and elevated, and the complete entirety united and filled with peace. That is my aspiration. Thank you.
Thank you.